am not ashamed of the gospel, the good news, the message that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is redeeming, saving, rescuing, glorifying human beings from the Jewish people and from all peoples. Romans 1:16. I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Gentile. When you hear those words, you know you're listening to Jesus Made Me Kosher. And we're so delighted to come to you today, Rabbi Glenn Harrison today, and we're coming to you live from the spacious and congenial studios of Faith Talk 1500, and want to do something a little bit different today. By the way, just want to let you know that Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael. You can find us on the web at shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. You will find there a wealth of articles, audio files, lots of great things, resources to help you learn more and more about the roots of your faith in Jesus, the Messiah. We call him Yeshua, and we want you to grow deep in your faith. We also want those of our beloved listeners who believe in Yeshua, who have a heart for the Jewish people, to be equipped to share the gospel with Jewish people. So do visit our website. It's really a great website. Also want to let you know that you're welcome to join us for worship services. We meet every Saturday morning at 10:30 at the facilities of Bloomfield Hills Baptist Church. It's on Telegraph Road, just north of Long Lake Road. And also Wednesday evening, including tomorrow night, every Wednesday we have a Bible study at 6:30. And in fact, tomorrow evening, we will begin a series in the books of Samuel, Kings, and Chronicles. And we are going to take our time and learn from the Word of God. Well, what I'd like to do today is have a little conversation with you about something that's near and dear to my heart. You see, one of the most commonly held misperceptions that Christians have about Jewish people is this mistaken idea that the Jewish people really know the Old Testament. Now, come on, fess up. How many of you actually were kind of intimidated about the idea of sharing Jesus with your Jewish friends because you thought, well, I just don't know the Old Testament well enough. And, you know, Jewish people really know the Old Testament. Folks, are you ready for the facts? Here's a fact. The vast majority of Jewish people you will ever meet in your life have never even read the Jewish Bible, let alone studied it in depth. You know, even religious Jewish men do not study the scriptures. They study the Talmud, which is a collection of rabbinical opinions and decisions. And while it does contain some scripture, it isn't the same thing at all. I've had discussions, and I kid you not, I've had discussions with rabbis who could talk to you all afternoon long about how to turn on or turn off a light switch without violating the Sabbath, but have never read the prophecies of Zechariah. You want to talk about misplaced priorities? You know, one afternoon years ago, and this was the mid-90s. I was on staff with Jews for Jesus, and I was doing evangelism at Rutgers University in Central Jersey. And I got into it. I was there every week. And the Jewish students would recognize me anytime I went out there in my Jews for Jesus t-shirt. And sure enough, one of them or the other would go hurry and run off and alert the local Chabad rabbi. Oh, that Jews for Jesus guy is here. We've got to do something about this. Well, one afternoon I was out there doing evangelism at Rutgers, and I actually got into a discussion with this ultra-Orthodox rabbi. And it was in between, it was during class time, so it was kind of quiet. He was there basically to try to encourage students not to talk to me, but meanwhile, class was in session, so there were very few people out. So he and I just were standing there, so we got into a discussion. And we were talking about the chief rabbi of his sect, whom he actually was convinced was the Messiah. Now, again, this is a rabbi I'm talking to. We were discussing his chief rabbi. And he was unable, this local rabbi, to give me a straight answer as to how he could actually believe that his rabbi, could be the Messiah, since his rabbi had not been born in Bethlehem of Judea. His rabbi had been born in Eastern Europe. How can he be the Messiah? Well, he couldn't give me a straight answer. In fact, he wasn't even familiar with the prophecy of Micah that made this a messianic requirement. And are you ready for this? This ultra-Orthodox rabbi at Rutgers University wasn't even familiar with the suffering servant passage of Isaiah 52:13 through 53:12. Did not even know about that. Now, you'd think at the very least that a rabbi who's at a university, assigned to a university where students are being witnessed to by Christians and by these pesky Jews for Jesus, you'd think he would at least want to get familiar with that suffering servant passage, if for no other reason than to at least have some kind of an answer to come back with. He didn't even know about Isaiah 52 and 53. I have had conversations with Orthodox rabbinical students who couldn't even name the two faithful spies. Remember when Moses sent the 12 spies into Canaan? Now, I could go to most church Sunday school classes and talk to elementary age kids who could tell me the names Joshua and Caleb. These Orthodox rabbinical students could not name Joshua and Caleb. And folks, we're not talking about some obscure passage from the Minor Prophets. This is Torah, the story of the 12 spies and the faithfulness of Joshua and Caleb is found in the book of Numbers, in the Torah. These guys didn't even know the most basic facts of the Torah, but they could talk to you for hours on end about kosher foods, kosher dishes and silverware, allowable fabrics for clothing, how far you're allowed to walk on the Sabbath, and what rabbi said about such and such a matter. They could tell you what every rabbi who ever lived probably said about such and such a matter. They couldn't tell you the names Joshua and Caleb. Now, many Christians have had Jewish people say to them, oh, we're still waiting for the Messiah. And I want to talk about that with you. Let me just conclude my previous remarks by saying, folks, if you are a believer in Yeshua, Jesus the Messiah, and you ever imagined, even thought remotely, that you were less knowledgeable in the Old Testament than your Jewish acquaintances, 99.5 times out of 100, that's not the case. Most Jewish people have not even opened that book. So I can almost promise you, you know the Jewish scriptures better than your Jewish neighbors. Now, many Christians have had Jewish people say to them, oh, we're still waiting for the Messiah. How many? Raise your hand, not if you're driving. Okay, you can raise one hand. How many of you have had a Jewish person say to you, oh yeah, we're still waiting for the Messiah? Can I tell you something honestly, folks? That's just a more polite way of saying, I don't believe Jesus is the Messiah. Most Jewish people don't even know what the Messiah is supposed to do, or who he will be, or even if it's an actual person. Some Jewish people think that the whole idea of Messiah is about a golden age of peace and prosperity in the world. You know, the vast majority of my Jewish people are not waiting for the Messiah. Maybe you're a Jewish person listening into Jesus Made Me Kosher. You heard about these two Jewish guys who are believers in you-know-who, and so you've taken to listening to this show. Most Jewish people don't really know anything about the Messiah. The vast majority of my Jewish people are not waiting for the Messiah. Most Jewish people are trying to live good and decent lives. But if we're going to be brutally honest, the vast majority of Jewish people are completely uninterested in the subject of the Messiah. Now, technically, to be a Jew, according to Maimonides, who was a renowned rabbi from the Middle Ages, technically, according to Maimonides, to be a Jew, you had to believe in the coming of the Messiah. It was one of the 13 articles of faith. But most Jewish people today are secular, not religious, in their thinking. But let's say, for argument's sake, let's say you had someone who wasn't just giving lip service, but truly was waiting for and expecting the coming of the Messiah. How would such a person even know the Messiah when he arrived? Well, they might just say, I'll know when I know. It'll be obvious. Obvious? By what standard? You know, a charismatic and powerful public speaker who inspires people and says they'll bring justice and order to the world and claims that they care about the little guy? Friends, history is replete with such men, these exact kind of men who put on a really good facade, claim to be for the little guy, claim that they're going to bring justice and order to the world. They're articulate, they're eloquent, they inspire people with their speeches, and history's full of just such men who ended up being tyrannical mass murderers. There have been so many false messiahs, scores and scores of false messiahs over the ages. How can a person prevent themselves from being misled by a counterfeit? The only reliable way to recognize the true messiah from any number of charismatic and even miracle-working imposters, counterfeit messiahs, the only reliable way to recognize the real thing from the phony is to look to the source. And the source is the Word of God, the Scriptures. You see, the Bible contains numerous prophecies about the Messiah, many of them quite specific. Hopefully today we'll talk about a few of them. You see, God didn't want there to be confusion about an event so important in the history of the world that we can't afford to be wrong about it. So let me tell you a little story to illustrate this for you. I think it was 1969, maybe it was 1970. I was 10 or 11 years old. I had a cousin, my cousin Joel. I had never met my cousin Joel. I knew I had a first cousin named Joel. He lived in Long Island, New York, and I lived in Los Angeles, California. And he was about 7 or 8 years older than I was. But I had never met him. I just knew that I had a cousin in New York named Joel, and I loved him without ever having met him because I knew he was family. Well, in the summer of 1969 or 1970, we found out that my cousin Joel was coming to spend a few weeks with us in Los Angeles. And I cannot begin to tell you how excited I was just to know that my cousin, whom I've never met in my whole life, was coming out to see us. I was so excited. Now, at this time, my grandfather was living with us. He had been widowed some years earlier. And so he was living with us. And on his nightstand in his room were some little framed photographs. And one of those photographs was of my cousin Joel. Well, from that day that my parents announced that my cousin Joel was coming out to see us that summer, just about every day I went into my grandfather's room and just sat there quietly and looked at that framed photograph of my cousin Joel. I studied it. I studied his face. I wanted to be the first one to spot him when he arrived at the airport. When he flew in, I wanted to be the first one to recognize him. And so every day I'd go into my grandfather's room, even if just for a minute or two. I'd look at his nightstand. There was the little picture of my cousin Joel. I'd study it, and then I'd go on. And so I was studying his picture. Well, finally the day came. I don't know if it was May or June. I don't know if it's 1969, 1970. The day arrives. My cousin Joel flies in. Now, for those of you who haven't been to Los Angeles International Airport, it's enormous. It's an enormous airport. Well, we got to the airport, and I guess we were running a little bit late, and we parked, and we're walking down this long aisleway. There's got to be 1,000 people walking in two directions in this long, fluorescent-lit corridor to get to the gate. And there's just 1,000 people. And I am watching. I'm this little 10-year-old guy, and my parents are on either side of me, and we're walking along. I'm watching like a hawk, looking for the face of my cousin in the midst of this crowd of 1,000 people. And my parents said his plane probably just got in, probably at the gate still. But I'm looking. I want to recognize him. And we're about two-thirds of the way down that long, long corridor, and I spotted him. It was my cousin Joel. He was walking the other way. I recognized him instantly. And And I turned as he passed by us. My parents didn't catch it. They didn't see him, or they just didn't recognize him. But I saw him. I said, Joel, just walk by. Joel, just walk by. They didn't believe me. We walked the rest of the way down the long corridor to get to the gate just to find out. No, the plane landed a little early. Everybody already is on their way to baggage claim. So we walked back down the long corridor to baggage claim. And sure enough, it was my cousin. I had spotted him in the midst of the hundreds, maybe 1,000 people. Why? Because I studied his portrait. I recognized him when he came because I studied his portrait. I recognized my beloved cousin because I had anticipated his coming and wanted to be the first to see him. You know, a Jewish person who wants to know what to look for so as not to be deceived by a false Messiah has only to study Messiah's portrait through the scriptures, the biblical composite. You know, the various prophets of Israel gave us these signposts, what to look for, that we might recognize Messiah when he came. And it's up to us to study those prophecies. Nobody's going to have an excuse on that day when we stand before God and say, well, I didn't know. God will say to you, I gave you the word through the prophets. I gave you the scriptures. I gave you my promises. I gave you the signs to look for, and you ignored it. Well, what are some of those general characteristics about the Messiah? You know, there's general things about the Messiah that the prophets told us about, and then there's very specific things about the Messiah. The first thing we learn is that Messiah will be gentle. Isaiah chapter 42, verses 1 through 4, portray for us a Messiah who, as it said, will not break a bruised reed. He will not extinguish a dimly burning wick. He will be gentle. Zechariah chapter 9, verse 9 says, behold, your king comes to you. He is just and endowed with salvation, humble and riding on a donkey, even on a colt, the foal of a donkey. So Messiah will come, yet he'll be gentle. Isaiah chapter 11, verses 1 through 5, tell us that the Messiah will be godly, that the Spirit of God will be upon him. His life will be so unique for godliness that we'll recognize it. Isaiah chapter 11 says, a shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse, and from his roots a branch will bear fruit. Now that also tells us specifically that the Messiah is going to be a descendant of King David, because Jesse was the father of King David. A shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse, and from his roots a branch will bear fruit. Messiah is called the branch. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and power, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord, and he will delight in the fear of the Lord. He will not judge by what he sees with his eyes, or decide by what he hears with his ears, but with righteousness he will judge the needy. With justice he will give decisions for the poor of the earth. So Messiah will be gentle, he will be godly, he will be just. And you know, this same passage in Isaiah chapter 11 tells us that Messiah will establish peace on earth and restore all of nature. Verses 6 through 9 says, the wolf will live with the lamb, the leopard will lie down with the goat, the calf and the lion and the yearling together, and a little child will lead them. The cow will feed with the bear. Their young will lie down together, and the lion will eat straw like the ox. The infant will play near the hole of the cobra. The young child put his hand into the viper's nest, yet they will neither harm nor destroy on all my holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. So even nature is going to be restored. Bears and cows are natural enemies of one another. One is predator, one is prey. Lions are not peaceful animals that live peacefully together with cows. It just doesn't happen. So when Messiah reigns, there will actually be a restoration of all of nature. And that passage goes on to say, in that day, the root of Jesse, meaning the Messiah, the descendant of David, will stand as a banner for the peoples. The nations will rally to him, and his place of rest will be glorious. It's just wonderful promises about the Messiah. And you know, Isaiah chapter 49, Jeremiah chapter 23, and Zechariah chapter 14 tell us that the Messiah will rule over all the world from Jerusalem. But there are also specific details about the Messiah. Now, remember, folks, those of you listening to Jesus Made Me Kosher, and we thank God for you listening, but there are specific details about the Messiah. Anybody can come along and say, I'm the Messiah, and be very eloquent, maybe even work miracles and give powerful speeches that move audiences at the deepest part of their emotions. That doesn't make somebody the Messiah. They have to fulfill what the scriptures said. And one of the things that the scriptures say is that the Messiah will be born in Bethlehem, and I don't mean Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Bethlehem of Judah, the prophet Micah, chapter 5, verse 2 in the English, verse 1 in the Hebrew. Messiah will be born in Bethlehem of Judea. That same passage tells us that the Messiah's goings forth are from the days of eternity. There's a hint. Messiah will be more than just a man. But we also find out that the Messiah will be a direct descendant of David. We got that from Isaiah chapter 11. We also get it from 2 Samuel 7, from Psalm 16. The Messiah will be a direct descendant of David. We also find out in Isaiah chapter 9 that the Messiah, contrary to our intuitions, instead of spending a lot of time in Jerusalem, we'll spend a lot of time in the Galilee. You know, I always wondered, why did Yeshua spend so much time in the Galilee? I mean, I'm thinking Messiah, Jerusalem, right? Goes hand in hand, but Yeshua spent most of his time in the Galilee. But Isaiah chapter 9 says, nevertheless, there will be no more gloom for those who were in distress. In the past, Adonai, the Lord, humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, that would be Galilee. But in the future, he will honor Galilee of the Gentiles by the way of the sea. Along the Jordan, the people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of the shadow of death, a light has dawned. And then Isaiah in chapter 9, verses 6 and 7 goes on to give us the reason for all the joy and the light that has come to Galilee. For a child will be born to us, a son will be given to us, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Peleoetz, Wonderful Counselor, El Gibor, Mighty God. Now that's an interesting name for somebody who's just a man. Peleoetz, Wonderful Counselor, El Gibor, Mighty God, Aviad, the Father of Eternity, Prince of Peace, Sar Shalom. Of the increase of his government and of peace there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing it and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. So the Messiah is going to be born in Bethlehem. The Messiah will be a direct descendant of David. Messiah will bring the light of God to the Galilee. Messiah will be human, yet also divine. The prophet Isaiah also went on to say that the Messiah will be initially rejected by the nation of Israel, and that he would suffer and be put to death. And if you don't believe me, look at Isaiah chapter 52, verse 13 through all of chapter 53. The Messiah's death, according to Daniel chapter 9, will precede the destruction of the second temple. The Messiah had to come before the second temple was destroyed. But again, the scriptures also tell us in numerous places, including Daniel 9, that the Messiah will rise from the dead and that he will open the way for the Gentiles to come to know the God of Israel. Well, there's so much more that we could say, but that's all we have time for today. But folks, look for the signs that God has given you in these prophecies to recognize the real Messiah, and don't fall for a counterfeit. Well, this has been Rabbi Glenn on behalf of all of us at Congregation Shema Yisrael. So delighted to spend this time with you this afternoon. Join us again tomorrow here on Jesus Made Me Kosher. On behalf of all of us, shalom, shalom.
Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael, a community of Messianic Jews and kosher-hearted Gentiles who serve the three-in-one God of Israel. You can find us on the web at shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. If you'd like more information or have questions, you can also reach us by phone at 248-593-5150. That's 248-593-5150. To hear how Jesus can make you kosher, join us every weekday at 3:30 right here on Faith Talk 1500.